And good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and the late Patty Fink, our guest today. Today's going to be an emotional show, and I want you guys to tell your stories and whatever it takes. But I want these. I want all the details, because most of them have not been getting through in the news, really. Our guests are Burke Burnett, Blake Rez. How do you pronounce
Rasnick?
Okay, Blake Rasnick and Michael Dominguez. Do you know, I realized that because we weren't using your last name from something we had said, but I never knew how to pronounce your last name. Okay, so Burke, Blake, and Michael, they are hate crime survivors. Burke's took place in Paris, Texas. The other two are recent from here in Oak Lawn. You probably heard about them on the news. Blake's was the first one. Michael's was soon after, and pretty awful. And these guys are heroes, not because they were attacked, but because of what they've done since then. Burke, let's just start with you. Your attack took place in 2011 in Paris, Texas. Tell us what happened.
Okay, so it was a Halloween party in my hometown of Paris, Texas. It was actually in a small town right outside of Paris called Reno. I was in the party was outside, so it was a like at a shop or like a big garage. There's probably between 20 and 50 people there throughout the night. I think there was closer to 20 whenever the attack happened. Everybody had been drinking, including myself. It was late at night whenever I got attacked, and it was sort of a result of something that happened earlier in the night. There was an almost fight that happened between a buddy of mine and a couple of guys, and I sort of stepped in and you know, helped to stop that, defuse that situation. And then I think shortly thereafter, a couple of the guys that were there sort of figured out that a gay guy had done that, and I don't think they liked that. So around 2 or 3 in the morning, I ended up getting jumped by you know, a number of guys. I think there were 3 or 4. Only 2 of the guys got arrested, but that's because I was drunk too, so I couldn't identify the 3rd and 4th guys. You know, I was sitting in a chair with a red Solo cup in my hand, talking to a friend, and I saw my friend's eyes sort of go up like they were looking out, you know, looking at somebody behind me. I look over, and I ended up getting knocked out of the chair then. I stand up to sort of, you know, get my footing, and whenever I do that, I sort of square up like I'm about to fight the guy that hit me, and at that point, I get hit in the back of the head by another guy. So it's 2-on-1 at that point. It's a fight at that point, and it ends up moving outside of the garage that we were in, and we were sort of backed up against a white Ford pickup. That's when it turned into 3-on-1. I kept getting knocked down. I don't know at what point I ended up getting stabbed, but you know, at the end of the attack, after I went to the hospital, I realized I had been stabbed in the back, and I had my right arm sliced open. There was also a fire going on that night outside. It was it's a rural East Texas town, so a lot of those, you know, parties like that have a you wouldn't call it a bonfire, but it's a barrel that's sort of cut long ways and cut open, and so it was like a barrel fire, and I had gotten thrown into that fire, so I had 3rd-degree burns on my arm. At one point, you know, I was fighting back the whole time. At one point, I ended up knocking, I don't know if I knocked him out, but I knocked one of the guys down, and you know, that was the one hit that I got during the attack. At one point, we were in a driveway, so I kept getting knocked down where there were rocks, and I remember this, and admittedly, I had been drinking, but I do remember this very clearly. I was scared for my life. I wanted to pick up one of the rocks because I was going to hit one of the guys in the head with the rock, but I remember thinking, if I do that, they're going to kill me. Mm-hmm. If I do that, they're going to kill me. So that's sort of how that night played
out. Did anyone step in to help? This was a party, so it was more than just the 5 of you.
Yeah, it was. They did step in towards the end. It went on for what seemed like a really long time to me, but they did step in towards the end. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then there were arrests.
There were arrests. So I went to the hospital. You know, a friend from the party took me to the hospital, and I did a police report is what you'd call it. You know, police came up to the hospital, did a police report. I don't remember I think there was about 24 hours after that before the first arrest, but, you know, there were so many people there that there were a lot of eyewitnesses, which I think was one of the reasons that they were kind of swift to make arrests. So they made arrests. Mm-hmm. The guys were charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon causing severe bodily injury. I feel like there were like a number of assault charges. I forget the exact wording of each one, but I think each guy got three assault charges, and then each assault charge had a hate crime enhancement. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how long did it take to bring them to trial?
Well, they didn't go to trial because they both pled out. They pled out, so they pled guilty. And it was, you know, it's been 4 years since it's happened, so I may be wrong when I estimate that it was about 4 months mm-hmm. from beginning to end.
Like, that's quick.
Yeah, it was quick. It was quick enough.
What kind of sentence did they get?
10 years and 8 years. I think the first guy that pled got 8 years, and then the second guy got 10.
When they were beating you, were they, I mean, as is very common in hate crimes, were they, you know, yelling out slurs, anti-gay slurs and
that
sort of
thing? Yeah, I mean, it like I said, it seemed like it took forever. And I mean, everything under the sun that you can think of, mm-hmm. I mean, stuff I'm not going to repeat, but yeah, you can sort of use your imagination, all the colorful stuff you could come up with.
Before you got here, Patty, we warned him with some of the words. Can't use those words on the air.
I just wanted to, you know, focus again, you know, for people who are listening, for our listeners. This was at a party with people you knew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's scary. You know, if there's any place that you think you did, there's a safe spot, it's if you're at a party mm-hmm. with friends.
Yes, it was at a party with friends, and one of the guys that that attacked me ended up getting arrested and sent to prison. I've known him for a number of years, and I mean we had a friendly relationship in the past. I mean, alcohol was a huge part of my story. I don't know that that's the case for you know a lot of other you know similar crimes, but I mean alcohol played a big part in my story. I'd been drinking, they'd been drinking. It was 2 or 3 in the morning.
And so at the initial, at the beginning of the investigation from the police, how did you think they cooperated? Was it satisfactory?
So there was a couple of all in all. Well, my let me just say that my case is I'm so fortunate that I got to see justice. I think I'm an anomaly in that regard. You know, looking at the 12 recent attacks here in the Oaklawn area, you know, there haven't been any arrests, certainly no convictions. I don't think, you know, they're not bringing any charges up against anybody. These 12 guys aren't getting to see justice served, and so that sucks. I did get to see justice served, so I'll say I'm really fortunate in that regard. At the time, I was really, really just angry. I was so angry that it happened to me. I was so angry about, you know, being in that small town where I felt like people had let this happen to me. I felt like, you know, the police weren't doing their job. In retrospect, I feel like they all did as best they could.
You know, and if you followed this, we covered it in The Voice, and it was covered on, I think, TV here in Dallas. And so we were following it and calling Paris police. But we kept using a picture of Burke, and you wouldn't recognize him. I mean, his face was red and swollen, and he almost didn't look human in this picture. That's how bad an attack it was. It was disgusting. So how long did you stay in Paris after that?
I stayed in Paris. I was gone before they got convicted, so it was just a few months. Okay. I think I ended up moving to Houston in maybe February of the following year in 2012. I was really just looking to escape. I was looking to escape the way I felt. I was looking to escape, you know, all those. You know, I came out of the closet really early, so I came out of the closet when I was 15. You know, I told my parents and my family and, you know, the principal
at school.
Yeah,
that's safe to do in Paris, Texas.
It was safe enough. You know, it's a small, conservative East Texas town. But, I mean, I'd never experienced any sort of, you know, obviously no kind of hate crime or, mm-hmm. or really any kind of, like, bigotry. I'd really never experienced anything like that in Paris. So I certainly don't mm-hmm. want to knock Paris in that way. But it was, you know, it was a small East Texas town that I came out in.
But people knew you were gay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. People knew I was gay. But all that's, and, you know, I was raised sort of religious. You know, dealing with that kind of stuff whenever I came out at 15, I dealt with it and sort of put it away. It all just sort of resurfaced after the attack, and I really had to, like, readjust to all of that.
Now, before we go on to one of the other stories, there are happy endings after this. You moved to Houston, then you moved up to Dallas, and...
Yeah, so I moved to Houston and didn't stay there long because I was trying to escape stuff and stuff wasn't working. So I ended up going back to mom and daddy's couch in Paris and stayed there for a short time. In 2012, towards the end of 2012, I moved to Dallas just to kind of get a fresh start. And I did. You know, I found a great community here. This is, I found the love of my life here. I met my husband in 2012. We dated for a year or so and then got engaged. I have a beautiful family now. I have a beautiful life. We've adopted a son. I have a 9-month-old baby boy, and I have another son on the way.
Congratulations!
I have a host of friends, and life is big and beautiful. So I certainly there's a happy. It got a lot happier. It was a really dark year in 2012 was, mm-hmm. but life is good now.
And because of what happened to you, you happened to meet a couple of other people. One of them is Blake. Blake was the first attack that happened in Oak Lawn out of this whole series of attacks that is still going on where there has not been an arrest. Blake, tell us about your attack.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was on the day of Pride, so I believe September 19th, and it was a Sunday, and I remember... waking up, and it was supposed to rain that day, and then it ended up actually being really beautiful. And I woke up, and I was like, texted two of my friends. I had just moved back to Dallas a week prior to that.
Yeah, welcome to Dallas.
Right.
Get your head bashed in.
So I coordinated with a couple of my friends, and we met up at my friend's house off of Mahana in Cedar Springs, and we walked to the parade from there, and was an awesome day. Beautiful weather, great turnout, and
I remember that day. I was grand marshal.
That's right. Awesome. So
she missed the show that day.
No, I called in. I called in.
You did. You did.
Ty Herndon.
That's you
right.
Did.
Right?
You
that's
did.
Right. So you made up for it.
Anyways, so we, enjoyed the day and the festivities, and about 8:30 that night, so it's still pretty early, my friends, two friends decided to go back to my friend's house, and I was going to go with them, but I ended up running into a friend that I hadn't seen in a while, because I actually used to live in Dallas, it was a move back, so, we went over just off the strip to off of Maple to Marty's, and I had a quick drink with him, caught up, and then I left from Marty's to head back to my friends off of Cedar Springs. So I was making my way back from Maple and kind of zigzagging my way back to Cedar Springs when I didn't know there were people behind me, but I got hit with a baseball bat on the left side of my head. Knocked me pretty silly, and next thing I know, I'm being pulled into a van of some sort by a group of guys.
You think it's four, right?
Yes. I definitely know, unless there was someone else in the front seat, I know there was a driver, and then three guys that were... kind of beating up on me. So
kind
of beating up on you.
Yeah. It was more than kind of.
What time of night? Because I know there's been people think it's been at different times today. Mm-hmm. What time of night was
it? It was about 9:30.
Okay.
Because I stayed about an hour longer than my friends who had left around 8:30, I think. So I pulled into the van, and I remember there was a guy with his knees on my shoulders at my head, and he was just going at my face with his fists.
Wow.
And then there was two guys that were kind of rummaging through my pockets. It was really hard to actually process what my thoughts were at that time. It was just your adrenaline's pumping. So
they drove you how far?
It didn't seem like that far. Like it we weren't in the car what seemed very long. And next thing I know, I'm being...
They dropped you just the other side of Maple. So
yeah.
You were near Cedar Springs.
Yeah. So
they dropped you Maple, maybe 5-10 blocks
at
most.
Yeah. It was Maple, or like Wycliffe and Sylvester, which is like a couple blocks off Maple.
Yeah.
So I at that time had no idea where I was, and they pulled me out. It was a dark street, and I remember a couple of them just like dragging me along the street off of Wycliffe, and they there was three guys at that time. There, two of them were at either side of me, just kind of kicking me in the chest and the stomach, and then where I was mostly focused on was the guy at my head was just going at my face with a baseball bat.
Wow. Oh,
trying to deflect that.
And while this is going on, were, same with him, were they shouting?
Yes.
Explicit?
Yeah, absolutely. That was where, you know, I was, you know, most scared is because they were definitely shouting a lot of negative slurs, and which I, again, won't repeat. But
So they dropped you mm-hmm. off of Wycliffe. You're only semi-conscious.
So yeah. So I'm. It's. I mean, that was just. It seemed like everything was very fast. But I mean, my main focus was just defending myself, and I remember just holding my hand up, trying to deflect the bat as mm-hmm. much as I could. And I ended up having like a couple of gashes in my hand. And the next thing I know is I went unconscious and woke up what turns out to be about an hour or so later. And I was just laying in the middle of a street. I had no idea where I was.
You were in the street?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like not on the side, but still like on the pavement.
In the street. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they left you for dead?
Yeah, definitely.
How did you get to the hospital?
So when I came to, you know, it was kind of disorienting, but the, you know, there was I was laying in a pool of blood, and they, I just started calling out. I couldn't really move that much at that point. And I remember seeing a street light in the distance, and I was calling out, and then I saw a couple of people, and I was like, thank goodness, someone's gonna find me. But I ended up calling, and they didn't hear me, and they were walking the other way. Luckily, the neighbor in a house nearby ended up hearing me and
called 911, and that's how you got to Parkland, a few mm-hmm. blocks away.
Yep.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis and the late Patty Fink. We need to take a break. We'll be back with more right after this.
This is Liz from UT Arlington, and I listen to Lambda Weekly podcast at lambdaweekly.com.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. We're talking hate crimes today. Burke Burnett, Blake Resnick. And, you know, I do this. Every once in a while, I don't get a name the first time, and then I blow it the whole show. Blake Resnick and Michael Dominguez are here. They are hate crime survivors. We're talking to Blake right now.
And you're just finishing up in Bell. They were yelling some, you know, gay expletives.
Yes.
So I thought it'd just be a good time to talk about what makes or what determines a crime to be a hate crime. And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, all crimes are hate crimes, and that's not true. I mean, these crimes that happened to you all were obviously targeted directly towards you all.
Yeah.
I know, Patty, you're like an expert on this. Can you talk about some of the legalities of what makes a crime, how it's defined as a hate crime?
Well, in I would think some simple terms, a hate crime is a category of crime that is specific to terrorizing a certain group of people. So if you like burn a cross on the front lawn of an African American family, that's a hate, you know, that's intended to terrorize not just the individuals in the home, but all black people.
Right.
And so most hate crimes, and certainly in Texas and the federal hate crimes prevention laws, are designed to be penalty enhancements. So you're not charged with something as a hate crime per se, meaning that, you know, somehow that's going to impinge on your guilt or innocence. That's not the case. But if you are found guilty of the crime, the basic crime, then your penalty, X years in prison, whatever that penalty might be, can be enhanced even to enlarge it, to extend it further, if it's successfully prosecuted as a hate crime.
Gotcha.
Now, Blake's is considered a hate crime by the police because they were yelling the F word and all that kind of stuff at him. The others are not so sure whether or not they heard anything, and so they're discounting that as hate crime. Is that the only thing that will qualify something as a hate crime?
Well, there has to be some sort of intent that you can prove in court. And if that intent is not clearly there, it's just like proving proving any other element of a crime. If you don't have enough evidence to prove it in court, then it won't.
Then it won't be prosecuted as a hate crime.
And and I think your case will be relatively easy, I would think, legality, because they didn't take any of your stuff.
No, they didn't.
Right. So it wasn't a robbery.
He wasn't robbed.
He was kidnapped. He was beaten. And I hate the word beaten because it sounds like, oh, he was beaten up. Blake still has scars all over the sides of his head. And that's from more than 2 months ago. You know, you look so much better than the last time.
You're still a cutie, though.
You do.
You really are.
But, I mean, they're still there.
Yeah.
This wasn't just he was beaten up.
Well, and just think about it. If the time – in the time it took you to recount the story, you were – imagine that amount of time being slammed with a baseball bat in the head or kicked in the chest at the same time.
Yeah.
That's just a phenomenal amount of violence.
And
potentially life-changing violence that could, you know – damage you for life.
I mean, you know, there was. I had two skull fractures. Luckily, neither required surgery. But you know, it could have been. You know, there could have been permanent brain damage and.
Sure.
How long? You could have been dead. They left you in the street, and you were unconscious for an hour. A car could have hit you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How long were you hospitalized?
So I stayed overnight in Parkland. I was going to stay. I ended up leaving late. Monday night. So one full night. They were just watching because I was showing signs of a concussion. So they were just watching that.
It's amazing you didn't have a concussion.
I know. It was the worst of it was, you know, the healing process was the stitches. I mean, there was about a little under 40 stitches. So, but.
Okay, Michael, yours took place on what date?
October the 2nd, the morning of October
2nd. Okay, so about 2 weeks after Blake's.
Yes.
Two or is that three?
Not
quite.
It was like a week and a half. Yeah.
Week and a half.
19th
okay.
of month.
Tell us what happened with yours. You don't remember as much.
No, it's coming back bits and pieces. I worked literally all day. I really don't go out during the week. I'm kind of lazy. Like to go home and watch TV. So I work on the Strip, actually, and some friends of mine were visiting from San Antonio. They had a volleyball tournament, and they all stopped into the shop that I part-time at and said, hey, you know, before you fly out to Austin, I was scheduled to fly out the next morning to go to the ACL Festival. They said, come out, have a drink with us. We haven't seen you in over a year. Just come and hang out for a little bit. So I said, okay, yeah, not a problem. I get off at 10:30, and you're right across the street. Might as well walk over there. So 10:30 rolls around. I walk across the street to JR's, hang out. It's myself and the three of them. Stayed there for about an hour or so. Then we walked over to S4 to watch the drag show for a little bit, and we drank a little bit. It was good to see them, but by 1 o'clock I was ready to go ahead and call it a night. I had to wake up at about 6 in order to catch my flight and immediately go to the festival. So I'm not 21 anymore. I needed to get a little bit of sleep. And so I told everybody goodbye. I walked downstairs. I remember waving goodbye to the door guy. He was somebody that I was acquainted with at S4. So I said, bye, you know, talk to you later. And as soon as I leave, the details become a little bit fuzzy. I do remember being hit in the back of the head. And the only thing I remember is just my entire body just getting hot. And then the next thing I remember, I woke up in the trauma unit and piecing together from, you know, the injuries I suffered and from my medical records. That was about 3 hours, 3.5 hours later when I finally was able to come to. And I suffered a fracture on the back of my head. My eye socket was fractured. My orbital wall was blown out. I'm still suffering from a orbital fracture. I was stabbed in my neck. Stabbed on the left side of my rib cage, stabbed in my arm, and then I have a couple of lacerations that look like defensive wounds, where basically I was, even though I blacked out and I really don't remember anything, I was trying to fight the guy off and succeeded. The first 911 call came from somebody driving west East, I believe, on Cedar Springs and saw me walking past the Havana Nightclub Lounge, which is a stone's throw away from S4. I was already covered in blood, and from what the police are telling me, the 911 call did say, hey, this guy, he's covered in blood, he's walking down the street, I can't turn around because of the traffic. They found me, I believe, in front of the Kroger parking lot, and I actually lived right down the street from there. It's the same route that I walk every single weekend, so the only thing that we can kind of piece together was survival instincts just kind of kicked in, and I kept just trying to make it home before I finally collapsed.
Here's what's frightening about yours. I mean, there's something frightening about each of these.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they're saying, be safe, walk in a lighted area. Walk where there are other people. Okay, it was a Thursday night, busy on Cedar Springs, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You were going from S4 on Cedar Springs, three blocks away to where you live on Cedar Springs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's lit the whole way. So you were in a lighted area with other people.
Yes.
And traffic on the street. It wasn't one of these darker side streets where you can say, oh, well, you know, Blake, what were you doing on one of those side streets? Well, it was only 9 in the evening when you did this. It's, you know, it should be safe to walk on those streets. There are apartments and people live on these streets. Yeah. What are you supposed to do if you live right there?
Yeah.
But has anybody said that they saw what happened? Any witnesses?
No. It's been about 2 months now. And from the information that I'm getting, there's a
$10,000 Crime Stoppers out for anybody who has information, and that's the one that there should be information.
There should be.
And, I mean, just from that, I mean, there is a lot of frustration that, you know, I'm very much a type A. I'm used to being in control of situations and being on top of everything, and the fact that I can't really contribute to any part of the search or give any kind of clear distinction on what happened is extremely frustrating.
Now, the idea that the police are saying that only Blake's is a hate crime, and they're not saying we're investigating this as a possible hate crime, is driving me
well,
you know, crazy.
You weren't mugged or anything either.
No, nothing was stolen from me. I had taken out cash to go to the
Cedar
airport.
Springs, in front of a gay bar.
So this was in front of S4?
We don't know.
I don't know, but it's S4.
Yeah.
Directly across the street is Italia Express, Havana.
Yeah, it's, from S4 to Havana, it is very lit.
Yeah, it might have been in front of
all gay bars.
Yeah, all gay bars. It's very lit.
What's the difference?
Yeah.
Right after my attack, I was a little bit hesitant when the DPD did ask, do you feel like this was a hate crime? Was this? I was a little bit hesitant to say that because I didn't want to incite any kind of panic, knowing full well what had happened to Blake, you know, a week and a half ago. And my mind never went to that this was. I don't think that my mind had fully comprehended on what had happened, and it wasn't until I was released from the hospital and really started being very open about what happened that I started saying, like, you know, nothing is stolen from me. Like, my cards weren't compromised. I had my Social Security card in my wallet that was still in there when they gave me back my belongings. Like, absolutely nothing was taken. And the more that I began to think about it, that's when the anger started happening, and it was, this is too close together. Mm-hmm. And too brutal.
On Cedar Springs, people do not hit people on with baseball bats, and that's
not a hate crime.
They may
throw a drink
at
them, but
yeah, right.
That's the extent of it.
You know, the only other possibility is somebody who knew somebody there who's angry at somebody. This is a random attack.
Yeah.
Somebody coming to Cedar Springs Road, that's a hate crime, and bashing them over the head and not robbing them. Because that's one of the things that the police are saying, possibly, these are crimes of opportunity. Meaning gay people are seen as
an easy target.
They weren't targeted for anything other than for their heads. So,
how long were you hospitalized?
2 days. And it was kind of the same thing with Blake. They wanted to make sure, since I was unconscious for so long, they wanted to make sure that I did suffer a concussion. As a side effect of that, I lost a lot of memory. My short-term memory is kind of crap right now. but that's gonna heal. And once my head was out of the woods, they went ahead and released me. Everything else has been pretty quick to heal up.
And it's coming back, your memory?
The attack, not so much. Bits and pieces, still. The frustrating thing is I'm getting stuff in dreams, and so it's difficult to discern if it's what actually happened, or if it's like a subconscious dramatization of what maybe I want to happen based on information that's fed. And that's kind of been the difficult thing about getting secondhand information about what happens to yourself. Your mind starts to, you know, not necessarily fantasize, but it creates scenarios about what possibly could have happened. And a lot of times it's a lot worse than what actually did happen. You always go to worst case scenarios.
One thing, your eye looked terrible afterwards.
It was swollen up. I'm very, very lucky that there was no damage to my retina, no damage to my cornea. I can still see out of it. It's very slow to heal because I opted out of surgery on it because just surgery is not something that I feel like undergoing. So the doctor said it's going to be a while. It's just got to be patient.
Are you getting a lot of pain as a result?
The only thing now is I still get some migraines, and the back of my head where the point of impact was is still really, really sore. Mm-hmm. Like whenever I get a haircut, it's just, you know, 20, 30 minutes of just torture.
Now, Blake,
with the clippers.
Your hair is real short on the sides. Now, it's probably better for it because it'll heal easier without the hair there and any kind of oils that would get into it. That must be painful.
Yeah. The first couple were – I mean, it took me – I'm one of those people that gets their haircut like every 1 to 2 weeks. And it was like about five weeks after the attack that I got my first haircut, and it was
brutal.
Fun.
Yeah, wow. I mean, we're talking that serious, these attacks, that you can't even get a haircut. These injuries are that serious.
I guess about 2 weeks ago, I went out to a birthday party at S4, and I go out. I can't count on how many times a year I go out to the clubs anymore, maybe once or twice. It's going to be a special event, and this was. So, but my husband, Denny, didn't want me to go because of what had happened to you guys. Be sure and look behind your back and watch what you're doing. And I parked in a very lit area, which is no guarantee, obviously. But obviously, you had already heard about what happened to Blake. Were you even thinking about that, though, when you went out? Was that like on the forefront
Honestly,
of your mind?
No. I had lived in that area since February. I've walked that, you know, it's 1 a.m, you're hungry, I'm going to walk down to Chef House and grab me some chicken fried rice
and
walk back to my apartment.
And you weren't on a dark side street.
No.
You know, I'm relatively new to Dallas as well. At the point of my attack, it was just shy of a year. When I moved into the area, there wasn't really any, hey, check out some crime statistics, or this is what's going on in our neighborhood, or this is what's happened. It wasn't until I already, you know, this happened to me that then I was like, well, did you hear about 2 years ago a man was, you know, murdered behind this bar? They found this here. And it wasn't until after that I heard about Shade Schuler, her being murdered as well. And so all of these things are kind of after the fact, which I understand when you're renting somebody a property, you're not going to say, hey, guess what? 12 people have been attacked in the area. But responsibly, people need to know what's going on in their community, because it definitely will factor into the decisions that you make. I mean, growing up, you always hear, don't, you know, look over your back and make sure you're, you know, playing safe. The only thing that I've ever thought about with walking is, well, you know, you be sure of your surroundings and don't carry a lot of cash and don't carry multiple credit cards, because if you get mugged, well, that's what they're taking. Never in a million years would I think, oh, in addition, they're going to stab you and beat you in the back of the head and fracture your face.
Now,
like, that's just not something that pops up.
You were both hit with baseball bats. Do police think that yours were the same people? Because they think that it's multiple groups doing
this. I don't know
this.
What I was hit with, to be 100%
honest. Oh, okay, okay.
I don't know.
But you, the way you were hit. You're saying don't walk with a whole lot of cash. On November 1st, one other person, he's not here, and I don't want to mention names right now, was walking home from Cedar Springs along a dark street on Reagan Street to his apartment about 3 blocks away. He had money on him. This is where these guys become heroes. It was on November 1st. The rent was due. He had his rent money with him. And it was stolen. I mean, aside from he was also attacked, same similar way. He was being very careful. He said he saw somebody behind him, so he started to cross the street, and somebody came from the opposite side of the street. The two were working together, and they got him. He protected his head, so his head wasn't injured as much as real bad bruises and scrapes on the lower part of his body. But his rent money was taken. Michael paid the rent.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Wow.
And awesome. When I talked to you, that was the first time I talked to you, you said, you know, I had friends that helped me after I was attacked, and I didn't have to worry about paying my bills, and it helped me recover.
I mean, everybody says that, you know, if you're in the right frame of mind, your body heals better, and that's 100% true. You know, everybody here can testify. Absolutely. When you're under, you know, extreme stress, you feel it. You're fatigued. You get sick. You're more prone to illnesses. What our organization, I mean, one of the big things is immediately what we can touch on is recouping any kind of financial loss. And we find that if
we haven't even mentioned
nice
your organization.
I was going to say, when are we going to get to that?
One, just like I do. So I always do bad segues. So why don't we take a break? You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Burke, Blake, and Michael are our guests. Pat, the late Patty, LaRon, I'm David. We'll all be back. Josh is here. Doc's here. David's in the back. Hi, David. We have an audience today. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
This is Kimberly Truex of the GLBT Wedding Expo, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. We're talking about hate crimes, and especially the ones that have been going on in Oak Lawn over the last 10 weeks right now. How many crimes do you count? Because everybody's counting different numbers.
Reported or unreported? Reported has been 12.
Right.
Through our organization, we're being inundated with messages from people that have been tracked unreported. I'm counting it upwards to about 25 since January.
Oh, since January.
Yes.
Okay. Are some of them similar attacks like the two of you?
Absolutely.
Hit on the head since January.
Absolutely.
And they didn't report them?
No.
Wow.
Aren't people going to the hospital?
You know, some people are going to the hospital, getting checked out. It's murky waters. A lot of people are being urged to report. Some say, well, what does it matter? It's not going to be investigated properly. Or they just stole $100 off of me. I don't think until a lot of these crimes started happening concurrently that people really put it together as, oh, wow, this is an issue. When you're the only one and you don't know of anybody else being attacked,
random
you think
crime.
You're an isolated
right.
incident.
Yeah, random crime.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you mentioned something. You guys are here. Something that brought you together, a group.
Yeah. We actually, Burke was the one that approached me after a public meeting, I believe, that we had.
Yeah, it was called a town hall LGBT task force meeting that Adam Medrano was putting on, and it was at the Resource Center. I got invited by Raphael McDonald, who's amazing. He's he's an advocate over at the Resource Center. Philip Kingston and Adam Medrano were both speaking there. They're the councilmen that kind of represent that district or those two districts. The police were there. Craig McNeil, who's also amazing, was there. He's the LGBT task force organizer, I think, for the DA's office.
So anyway, Dallas County DA's office.
Right? Yeah. And he it was a task force meeting there, and I was just hoping to go and be a part of that conversation and offer a little bit of hope to any of the survivors, because I knew that hearing from somebody that, hey, this happened to me too, and it's going to be okay. Like, I'm okay, you're going to be okay. That there may be some value to that. So after that meeting, I went up to Blake. I went up to Michael. We all exchanged numbers. I said, we started looking into whether or not there was a support group, because that was sort of a resource that we were all wanting to see where that was, if there was one. It turns out there really wasn't one. And so we just sort of put one together, really informally, met. There was four or five of us at the first meeting, really kind of an unorganized deal, just offering support, offering fellowship. And it sort of blossomed into a way that we've been able to be really effective and help other survivors. That's great.
And what's it called?
It's SOS. The SOS stands for Survivors Offering Support.
Awesome.
So what kind of what did you get out of it, Blake?
I mean, it just like Burke said, it's mine was the first, so it was afterwards. I mean, I had overwhelming support from the community just via messages, Facebook. But Burke said it really good the first time we met. No one quite understands how you're feeling except that they've gone through it before, and so
right.
having Burke reach out to me, that night. I think that you introduced us, David, and that was just a big relief mm-hmm. to kind of feel like someone knows what you're going through and knows mm-hmm. what you're feeling.
Yeah, and when I wanted to do this show, it wasn't because, oh, I know what you're going through. I mean, I've listened to the stories and I've been reporting on it, but I can't possibly know what you're actually going through emotionally. Michael, I've seen on your Facebook a couple of times, you know, and Michael's the A personality and he's strong. I'm having a really terrible day today, and I feel I'm disappointed in myself for having that kind of, Michael, what you just went through, it's okay.
And you know, and I think that, you know, my own experience, and I've always just been very hyper-analytical. You go through emotions, and then afterwards you're able to look back on it and say, like, oh, well, this is what has happened, and this is why you're feeling that way. That's just been my personality my entire life. And I feel once Burke came up and said, hey, this is what I'm thinking that we should start, my mind immediately went to, yes, this is what you need to do. I said earlier in the show that I'm a type A control freak. I'm used to being in control of situations.
And the 501c3 papers were filed, and the incorporation papers were filed.
But my situation, I was completely not in control. I was so in control, I can't even remember, and I can't even offer help in catching who did this to me. So this is a way for me to take control of what happened to me and put some good and help other people. And I understand that not everybody is built like me. Not everybody goes into hyper, you know, overdrive where they take control of situations and they go out and they do it. But I also understand that I have bad days myself, and I've had days regardless of the amount of support you have from family and friends. They have sympathy. What I was missing was empathy, was that person looking at me and saying, I get it, without even saying a word. And if I have days like that, and I'd like to consider myself, you know, pretty thick-skinned, there are other people out there who are going through the exact same thing that may not be able to hold up as well as I have. And so putting together this group was a way to not only kind of help myself through the situation, but also help other people who need that as well. And it's just funny how life works. And I don't think I've ever told Burke this. I followed Burke's story when I was in Austin. I was very active in the community and things of that nature. So I knew of his story, what had happened. And we lobbied and we marched and we did all those things in Austin, Texas. And when I first met him, I didn't put two and two together. And I remember, you know, sympathizing with his story 4 years ago. And when he told me his story, he said, I know who you are. Oh my God, I know who you are. And then it turned from sympathy to empathy. And it's just weird how it's that full circle of marching for equality for somebody. And now he's a friend and he's working side by side with you, and you're doing something for the community. And I just, that's something that has given me a lot of strength in saying it's just weird how interconnected we are and how life brings people together right at the exact moment when they're needed.
There's been a lot of talk about how do we, what solutions we should bring up to handle this. Police presence, cameras, more lights, et cetera, et cetera. What do you all, just all of you, if you want to chime in, what do you think about, I guess, the gay community kind of taking our own whatever to defend ourselves?
You know, I think that, you know, and I mentioned this at the town hall meeting, and I think this has sort of been the things that other people have said. Enhanced police presence down in the Oaklawn community is a big deal, which I think we've got that, so that's great. Also,
hopefully it's permanent.
Hopefully, and I know that funding's an issue and all of that, and however that works, that's certainly not, I don't know how that works, but I know that having the police down there and enhanced presence is part of the solution in my mind. Having cameras and well lit areas just they help prevent crime, and if a crime does happen, it gives you some evidence to work with. So those are parts of the solution. And then I think, you know, none of us work in the law enforcement field, so I don't know how, you know, well equipped we are to really handle those questions. But as members of the gay community, I think that looking for those, you know, gaps in resources, identifying those and then closing those gaps is a big deal. And so we've tried to do that with SOS. You know, we've got a support group. There's some financial aid, you know, that we can offer, thank God, due to some fundraising and stuff like that. You know, if and when people need it, you know, if they're attacked and they're robbed, you know, hopefully we can sort of be, you know, Robin Hood of sorts, you know, first responders. I think that's part of the solution. But also, and, you know, people just coming out whenever this happens and saying, this happened to me and it's not okay.
Yeah.
People
mm-hmm.
reporting it. Because when I would do those interviews and I would cry after, you know, back in 2012, and it was so emotional for me. It was such a dark year right after I got attacked. I was going through a whole lot, but in my head I kept thinking of, you know, the young kids, young gay kids that maybe haven't even come out of the closet yet, who are maybe going through some of the same emotional stuff that I went through when I was younger, who maybe look in the mirror and don't like what they see because of some crap that they've heard from other loved ones or whatever. If they see that, hey, this happened to me and it is not okay and I'm going to fight back, there's some hope there. And I think that's honestly, that's a real part of the solution that we can all be a part of.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, and I'm not like, I'm probably the opposite of Michael. I'm not the outspoken. But, you know, having these guys encouraging me to actually speak out about it is huge. I mean, and just listening to Burke's speak there just lights a fire in me, because that's not naturally something that I would do personally.
I think the more that you're able to speak out on it, and the more that you're able to say, this is what happened to me, this is what I'm going through, this is where I'm working towards, you take away its power. You take away its control that it has over you. You take away the fear. You take away the sadness. You get rid of that, and then it just becomes something that has happened that has molded you into the person. And it can either A, destroy you and beat you down and turn you into a shell of yourself, or you can take it and you can be stronger and turn that into, you know, the gasoline that you put in your engine to go forward and do greater things than you never would have imagined that you were going to do. Up until my attack, I really wasn't enjoying living in Dallas. I considered moving back to Austin, and it just didn't feel like home to me. I was regretting my decision to move here, and then this happened, and it's kind of weird to think, oh, it took me getting almost murdered to feel like I belonged here, but now I feel like I have a purpose, and it's like, oh, this is why things happen. Mm-hmm. This is why I was led here. So I just kind of have to trust that things happen for a reason, and I'm working with what I've got.
Is there any talk about neighborhood watch groups?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been some talk of that. That's certainly not our group. That's not what we're about. But you know, I think it's that's a response that has come up. You know, we're all, I think, you know, Facebook friends, and we're part of a few different, you know, Facebook groups, and we're connected in that way. And there's been community meetings that we all attend with other members of the community. And I think some members of the gay community, the Oaklawn community, have been so mad that they've talked about doing neighborhood watch with, you know, concealed handguns. And, you know, if that's the approach they want to take, that's their business. I can certainly relate to them being upset and angry and wanting to react. And I, while we may have different approaches, I certainly appreciate the sentiment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, some of the solutions that that they've said, as if these are going to stop everything. More lights, walk where it's lighted. Michael, you were walking where it was lighted.
Mm-hmm.
Walk in groups. Mm-hmm. But certainly most of the attacks were single people. There was one attack where it was three people and they got carjacked. Mm-hmm. Different people did that one. Not the same group that attacked with baseball bats. However, right in the middle of all this, three people walking to their car on a lighted street got carjacked. You know, stay off of side streets if you can. Michael, you're on Cedar Springs.
You know, I think it's and I understand when people give things that you shouldn't do. It's kind of like, you know, when you're a child, it's like, don't talk to strangers and make sure you stay off the street and don't play in the middle of the road. We look at this and we kind of scoff and say, oh, but all of this still happened. But we have to protect ourselves. You know, as a community, I am actually shocked every single time I hear somebody say, I didn't even know this was going on. Mm-hmm. It's going on. It's going on where you're coming to play. It's going on where you're coming to eat and drink and all of that. So as a community, we kind of have to watch out for ourselves. You know, if your friends are parked in different parts of the neighborhood because we know parking is not an ideal issue down there, maybe drive them to their vehicle. You know, be that person that drops everybody off at their car. I mean, it may seem like something small, and in my opinion, it's really stupid. We shouldn't have to do that. We're all adults. We come here because we think it's safe, but for the time being, we've got to be proactive. We've got to help ourselves. Taking guns to the street, not exactly the smartest thing, but we don't want to get to that point.
And I think, too, a lot of women already get this. We know this from
absolutely
day one. Mm-hmm. That you have a buddy with you, if you drop them off at their car and you wait till they get in their car and they start their car and their car moves.
Right.
Because if, you know, they may be stuck. And I think a lot of guys don't relate to that.
It's privilege.
It is.
It's something
privilege.
That you, you have to think about.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's a really sad situation when that's the first thing that pops up, like a checklist. Do I, am I in a lighted area? Do I have my hand on my phone? Do I have my hand on my keys in case somebody – it's not something you think about all the
time. Exactly, and yet I think a lot of women do.
Absolutely.
Actually think about this all the time, every moment when you're out. And guys don't. Yeah, they just don't. Yeah. But I think it is a good piece of advice. And you say, well, we shouldn't have to do that. We shouldn't be attacked, period.
Yeah.
But we are, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a really good idea to when you go out for the evening, you can even have a lot more fun when you're with somebody.
Right.
You know, go out together and walk back to your cars together and have that designated driver and, you know, someone who can be really alert. With you, and I think those are really good things.
Yeah.
And I think too with the lights that are excuse me, the cameras that are being placed down in Oakland, in the whole area, I think that's just a start. Mm-hmm. So we may have read about 10 that are going to begin, and they're in well lit areas and common major thoroughfares. But that money's been freed up from a bond package in both Adam Medrano and Philip Kingston, because you know Cedar Springs is that line between their districts.
Mm-hmm.
So. They're using that money now to do those cameras, but there will be others to come as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing. And as they pointed out at the task force meeting, those cameras are going to be major thoroughfares. And if we have a description, then we can see maybe where those offenders traveled.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There is only one solution. Mm-hmm.
It's going to take everything.
Solutions
it is.
Coming together. Mm-hmm. And it's... This facilitates conversation. There has to be conversation about what's going on. You have to educate yourself about where you're going. You've got to show sympathy. We're a very diverse community, but we're a community. We're all each other's got for most of us. You've got to look out. You've got to ask questions. You've got to provide help when help is needed. If you see somebody walking by themselves, ask if you can walk with them or if you can give them a ride. Mm-hmm. Don't discount the work of some, because we're all ultimately working towards the community at large. Mm-hmm. So just understand that. You may not understand what's going on behind the scenes, but there's work. Believe me, my phone, all of our phones have been blowing up for the past 2 months at all hours of the night of trying to get some stuff moving to make changes in this area.
And part of why we wanted you on is to clear up some of the misinformation that's out there directly from you all. But you have a friend who's working on a documentary about this. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Steve Pomerantz, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, he approached all of us individually once all of this, you know, these assaults started happening, and he's a documentary filmmaker. And at first it just kind of started with interviewing survivors of assaults, and it was, you know, a story to tell, and he just wanted to kind of get the personal level of that. And as these assaults started happening more frequently, the story just kind of snowballed into actually making a change into Oaklawn and how business is done. And so he's documenting, you know, the attacks on a personal level and everything that, the activist group is doing in order to make Oaklawn a safer neighborhood, to SOS. It's a really, really great tool, I feel, particularly in this day and age when social media and visual media and everything is how our stories are getting out. It's a very powerful tool to be able to educate not only people in the Dallas community, the LGBTQ community, but the straight communities and the cities around here. And like Burke said, these young kids who may be coming out and scared to go to a safe haven and scared that this is the violence I have to endure, they could see this project and think, wow, you know, this happened to this person. Now he's married with two kids, and that could be me. I can still have the life that I want. And so it's a fantastic project. If you go to his page, A Story to Tell on Facebook, the trailer is there on it, just the first, I believe,
and it's awesome.
45 seconds,
really,
a minute.
It's really good.
It's great. It's great.
You know, and this is not over for you. If they catch somebody, you're going to be going to court. You're going to need each other's support for that, because that's not easy. And don't worry, Blake, just because Burke got married within 4 years and has two kids doesn't mean that you have to
pressure.
Do that.
No pressure.
No pressure.
The clock is ticking.
Right?
The one thing I do want to ask everybody in Oaklawn or anybody going to Oaklawn is just be safe.
Absolutely. Yeah. Can I chime in really quick and temper a few of the statements that we hear a lot? Is, you know, walk in these lit areas, you know, be smart. You know, if something happens to you in Oaklawn and you get attacked and you weren't in a well-lit area or you were alone or you had been drinking, there's no shame in that. You weren't asking for it, none of that. So I hear those suggestions a lot, and there's a lot of value in that, but there's certainly no shame. This isn't any of our faults. This isn't any of the survivors' faults. Nobody deserves it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. You're one of hundreds of people that are doing the exact same thing. Yeah. This is what the community, the businesses would be out of business if we weren't giving them money to drink.
Right, and so parking on every available parking space that is in Oaklawn, which in part is on dark streets. I want to thank the three of you for coming here.
Thank you so much.
I'm so happy, the two of you, well, three of you, because the pictures I saw of Burke were horrible. I did not recognize you when I met you. Two of you, within 2 months, you really have made remarkable recoveries, and I'm glad to see
Thanks
that.
Thanks so much for being on.
Thank you for sharing your stories.
And we'll be back next week with more Lambda Weekly.